The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Are you interested in the cutting edge of investing? That means frontier and emerging markets. And would you like to get started? Or perhaps you are already investing but still have questions. Welcome to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. On today's program, we'll take a look at news, trends, and background information that you should know to become an informed investor in new and emerging opportunities. Now, here is your host, Gavin Graham.
Hello, and welcome back to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing. I'm Gavin Graham. I'm here with you each Wednesday at this time, which is 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific, and 2 p.m. in the UK. By the way, if you miss part of this program, there's a repeat 12 hours later. If for any reason that you don't get to hear all of it or you come in partway through, please remember about the repeat. Each week, I talk to a global roster of guests to look at emerging and frontier markets. We analyze what works in them right now and what I believe will work in them in the future. My guests, who include experienced fund managers, analysts, and journalists on the ground, are always looking at what's happening in these markets and attempting to look through the noise, so as you might say. I spent most of my professional life analyzing investments and hiring fund managers to handle large amounts of investors' money, and I hope that I can spot the difference between promising investments and maybe those that are a bit less promising. By emerging markets, we obviously mean what are called the BRIC countries. That's Brazil, Russia, India, and China. Although my first guest today will put forward the thought that probably that is a term we should be retiring, in that there's very different dynamics happening in those different markets. Apart from the BRICS, we also have Turkey, Chile, Mexico, and the Czech Republic in the emerging market category. And we'll be looking at frontier markets as well, by which we mean countries like Colombia, Vietnam, Nigeria, Bangladesh, Kazakhstan, Ghana, Slovenia, and Botswana. Today we'll have reports from the Middle East and Colombia, and next week we expect to have a report from Nigeria. To go deeper into emerging markets, I have Wall Street veteran James Awad on the line. James is a chairman of Plimsoll Mark Capital, a division of Zephyr Management LP in New York. The two companies have about $750 million in assets under management. He's also a contributor to the book my co-author Al Emmett and I have just completed on frontier markets, entitled Investing in Frontier Markets, which is being released in several countries later this month from Wiley. Welcome back to the program, James.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Now, in terms of emerging markets, some reports have been drawing a fairly negative outlook given the major underperformance of these markets against developed markets over the last year to 18 months. But you, I think, have a somewhat more positive view.
Well, on any sort of a intermediate long-term basis, yes, I can't guarantee that the news is going to get better over the next few months. But if you look at what's going on in terms of stock performance, the underperformance of the emerging and to a lesser extent frontier markets, or let's call them the non-developed country markets.
Yeah, good
the
phrase.
Underperformance in 2012 and 2013 has really stretched the relative valuations. And those non-developed markets are as cheap, basically, as they've ever been relative to the developed markets. At the same time, you have a situation where the developed markets news is getting better, and there is evidence that that is pulling along some of the non-developed markets. For instance, the news in China has been getting better recently. And it's a developed market, but it's been one under severe stress. The news out of Japan has been getting better. And even Brazil, which has huge secular issues, the news the last few months there has gotten a little bit better. So I would say the fact that the developed markets are going to pull along the nascent recovery in the emerging markets, and the fact that the emerging markets are as cheap as they've ever been relative to the developed markets, I think if you're willing to look out over time. The next major change you're going to see is a little bit of a deceleration in the developed markets and stability, and possibly acceleration in some of the non-developed markets.
So expanding on that a little, when one's talking short-term and long-term, and as you say, it's obviously impossible to give a forecast as to what will be happening in the next 3 to 6 months, markets being uncertain as they are. But what would you mean here by over the long-term?
Well, I would say, 2014, actually, which is only 3.5 months away, for the year 2014, it's possible that you could get outperformance in the non-developed markets relative to the developed markets, only because of the huge move you've had in the developed markets. And if I'm right, the perception of rate of change will tilt in favor of the non-developed markets, then 2014 could be a year of outperformance.
And so the lagging performance by non-developed, by emerging and frontier markets has obviously created some buying opportunities. How cheap exactly are these markets now, both by comparison with developed markets and by comparison with their recent history in terms of valuation?
Right. Well, depending on which markets you're using, I mean, there are a plethora of markets, but many of them are selling at 9, 10, 11, 12 times earnings versus 15 in the developed markets, and that's on the very lower end of the relative valuation range historically.
Now, that is, obviously, whenever you start to get single-digit P's, that's usually the sign that at the very least you should be having a look at it. And, of course, sometimes things stay cheap. But you did make the point about that some markets, because obviously making blanket statements about emerging markets or even the BRICS across the board is not a very useful exercise. We should really be focusing on markets individually. And are there ones, for example, you don't particularly like, even though they might appear cheap?
Yeah, well, I think that Africa basically is not a good story for the foreseeable future, because you do have a plethora of corruption issues there, and I don't think the world recovery is going to be strong enough to make commodity plays that good. Then you'd have to add Russia to that, as again an issue, a country with issues of corporate governance, and also they're basically a commodity country. I don't think commodities will do that well. And then I would say that the Middle East is a mess by any stretch of the imagination.
Yep.
And I don't see those economies, other than some of them benefiting from the price of oil or the ups and downs of oil, I don't think that those areas are very attractive.
Which ones would you think actually at the present time are looking attractive or starting to look attractive? China is the one that comes to mind, because it does appear as though there is some reacceleration in economic growth there.
Yeah, well, China looks like things are getting better, but rather than invest in China, you can invest in non-China Asia on a variety of companies listed on the Singapore and Hong Kong exchanges that basically cater to the growing middle class in that whole region.
Right.
And many companies and geographies that will benefit from not only what's going on in China, but the periphery of China and the whole Asian experience. And then I would say the news in India has gotten so bad.
Yep.
That it can only get better. And
yes.
if you do look at India, it's got better demographics than China. The population is growing. They do have an emerging middle class. The fact that it's a democracy is both good and bad. And the good part is that it's going to have sustainability in terms of the economic and political system. The bad is that it moves very slowly. And I think that the bad economic news, I think, is going to shock them into the reforms that they need to make. And that, therefore, if you're willing to experience a few more bad months or quarters of bad news, that India is really quite attractive here. And then I would point to Mexico as a country that is pretty far along the reform issues that it needed to accomplish, and also the fact that the United States is one of the best geographies in the world right now is pulling Mexico along. So those are a few of the ones that I think are attractive.
Okay. Do you think it was a mistake to actually invent the term brick in the first place, given the very different demographics and resource exposure of these four major countries? Or is it, was it useful then, but it's past its sell-by date now?
Well, I think the latter is true, that when it was created, it was an appropriate term. But that now there's been such a divergence in the evolution of the various countries that you can't really deal with them as, you know, one term to describe all.
And to finish up here, James, in previous conversations we've talked about active versus passive, and the fact that if you're buying an ETF, in essence, you're getting what the markets look like at this moment in time, as opposed to an active manager making decisions. Would the differences between the different BRIC countries militate in favor of taking an active approach to emerging and frontier markets?
Yes, absolutely. This is one area where there is real value added in terms of geography picking and stock picking. If you just buy an ETF, you're going to be weighted towards the largest countries, and you're going to be overweighted in commodities. And that's really not what you're trying to accomplish by investing there. You're really trying to capture, first and foremost, the growing and emerging middle class.
Well, that's great, James. Thanks very much indeed. We do appreciate your insights. And as you say, we've seen a big disparity in terms of performance between developed and non-developed, which may offer some opportunities in the emerging and frontier market space.
Sure. Talk to you soon.
Thanks. Our thanks to James Awad at Plimsoll Capital for sifting through some of the emerging markets and frontier markets, those he likes and those he doesn't. Perhaps we ought to give up using the phrase BRICS in light of some of these developments, which was an important point that James made. When I come back from the break, I'll be talking to Paul DeSisto at M&R Capital Management in New York about the potential effects of the so-called tapering by the Fed on some of these emerging and frontier markets. He says it's another example of how we should look at countries individually and avoid across-the-board generalizations. Please stay with us for that.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
This program is produced by EFMI Media, which has become the leader in information about emerging and frontier markets investing. EFMI recently compiled the book entitled Investing in Frontier Markets: Opportunity, Risk, and Role in an Investment Portfolio, set for release by John Wiley & Sons later this year, and another book, also on frontier markets, which will be on store bookshelves later in the year. We are also launching a newsletter called EFMI. For more information, email info@emergingfrontier.ca. For more news about upcoming program segments, the books we have written, or the EFMI newsletter, please email info@emergingfrontier.ca. You can call 416-944-1750.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Is your business model robust enough? In today's ever-changing business environment, people are working to transform themselves, their futures, and their business. Tune in to Business Reinvention with your host, Nancy Lynn. To stay ahead of the game in business, you have to constantly reinvent yourself and your organization. With Nancy's experience and that of her guest experts, you'll learn from stories of inspiration, innovation, and forward thinking. Listen for Business Reinvention live every Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned into Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. To connect with our program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's toll-free in North America, 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to info@emergingfrontier.ca. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing. I'm Gavin Graham. In this segment, we're going to look at the possible effects on emerging and frontier markets of the so-called tapering by the Federal Reserve. Tapering refers to the Fed's plan to reduce the amount of bonds that it's purchasing from $85 billion a month to some lower number. For that, we have Paul DeSisto on the line from M&R Capital Management in New York, which has about $500 million in assets under administration. Welcome back, Paul.
Good morning, Gavin. Thank you for having me.
Not at all. Thank you for being here. And we're not going to specifically be talking about the impact on investments of the crisis in the Middle East, but you were saying it had some impact on your life and brings back some memories. When were you over there?
1991, during the first Gulf War desert storm. It brings back memories of getting off of the aircraft, which was air-conditioned, and the heat just would hit you in the face.
Yep.
And living in the tent and getting the sandstorms that would kick up periodically. Other than that, it was pretty nice.
Well, that's one way of describing it, certainly. But obviously, events such as that are some of the dramatic things that can cause sort of markets to move. What are you anticipating in global markets today in light of President Obama's speech last night, which seemed to essentially rule out military action with the new willingness of the Syrian regime to actually, without admitting it has chemical weapons, agree to decommission them under Russian supervision?
This was just sort of a redo of what was announced several days ago when he went ahead and, this is the president, said he would consult with Congress before doing anything. I think that was two Saturdays ago. So the market's concerns were pretty much put on the back burner then, and I think they're still back on the back burner, even more so. We'll have to see, of course, what happens, but the market clearly has been relieved and anticipates less intense situation there, and it will probably be up today because of same reason.
Yep, I think you're correct looking at what's happening on the screens. So moving away from the short-term noise, as it were, looking at the effect of rising interest rate caused by the Fed not even beginning to remove some of the stimulus, but just talking about the fact that it might, what's been the effect so far on emerging and frontier markets?
Initially, when the taper was first announced, May was when it happened. They started discussing it. The Fed started discussing it aggressively, and it caused yields on the emerging market debt to really spike up a lot. I mean, they went basically from around 5% to the 9% area on their 10-year paper. That is a big jump on a percentage basis from 5 to 9. So
yep.
It also caused a bit of a hesitancy to issue. However, with tapering looking more and more likely after September 18th, which is the next Fed meeting, some of these frontier markets have gone back into the market and have said to themselves, well, maybe we should go ahead and start borrowing now before rates get even higher. So I think we're starting to see a fair amount of additional activity. It has been quiet for a few months, but it's starting to come back.
And would it be fair to say that the historically low U.S. rates led to much higher borrowing by frontier markets than anyone might have anticipated?
Oh, it certainly did. I mean, the rates were so uncharacteristically low, hadn't been that low in decades, that anybody who wanted to borrow some money said this is the chance to do it. And we hit that peak, I guess, several months ago. I guess in April we had the that bond that was issued, I think, by Zambia, and that was pretty much the record, and they're going to get higher from this point on.
So, effectively, as you say, with higher interest rates, some frontier market borrowers are thinking we should come back to the market now before rates go even higher. Do we have some names that might be coming back, and what sort of yields would they be looking to borrow at?
Sure. The country that got the best rate actually was not Zambia, it was Rwanda. It was a $400 million 10-year bond launched in April, and it was yielded below 7%.
Wow!
People have to understand that these are not investment grade countries either. So that is an incredibly low rate. Frontier debt yields, they have gone up between 200 and 400 basis points, and before it goes up a little bit further, some other countries that are discussing issuing some paper include Kenya, Mozambique, and Armenia. They want to do it before the September 18th meeting, so we'll have to keep an eye on that. They are going to be dollar bonds, by the way. Virtually all of these are not local currency bonds. They are dollar bonds. I think it's important to remember that. And just because they're dollar bonds doesn't mean there isn't any danger. If rates go up, the value of these bonds are going to go down. So the fact that they're in local or U.S. yields, U.S. currency is not that important. Armenia is talking about issuing some paper, Bangladesh, Bolivia, Mozambique, and a Sri Lankan bank, which is state-owned, so that is, in effect, a sovereign. So you're in a situation here where countries all over the developing world, the frontier markets, if you will, from South America to old Commonwealth of Independent States to the Middle East to South Asia, they're all going to be yielding paper, giving out, buying some, selling some paper and trying to get the yields before they go up.
So that's the fixed income side of things as far as the effect of Fed tapering. But one of the reasons the Fed was even contemplating tapering was that the economic growth in North America, in Japan, and even in, heaven help us, in Europe, was starting to actually pick up sufficiently to feel that the authorities to feel that maybe they could remove some of the extraordinary stimulus. What's been the effect on frontier equity markets year to date?
The funny thing about these equity markets is they are all over the place. One has to be very, very cognizant of the differences that take place in different countries and different regions, because countries have problems that are specific to them.
Yep.
So the wide disparity in returns, I did some research, was very, very striking. Everybody knows about Argentina having their problems with the bonds that they don't want to pay off for that 9% who did not want the deal that was offered on the default. That dollar market, in dollar terms, their market is up 32.16% year to date.
Yep.
Ghana's up 44%. Local currency, it's up 65%. Obviously, there are issues there with currency exchange rates. United Arab Emirates, 35%. Kenya, 32%. And Pakistan, which is in the news every day because of the issues with Afghanistan, up 21%. The worst performing year to date, Jordan, perhaps that shouldn't be surprising. It's right next door to Syria, and they're getting a lot of refugees sent in there.
Yep.
Ukraine and Jamaica, down 19% and 18%, respectively. So, again, all over the area with regards to returns. And this is another reason that I maintain that a managed portfolio with a managed portfolio, a portfolio manager, you could dedicate it to what they're doing, is really the way to go on these markets.
Absolutely. And you made the point about individual countries having individual factors driving on the UAE, which is in the Middle East, but quite removed from Syria, both geographically and in terms of its stage of development, is up 35. Jordan, which is right next door and has the refugee problem, is down 20.7. So given these factors, what are your picks right now as far as frontier markets are concerned, and which would be the best way of gaining access to them?
The best performing fund that's had a long 5-year record, and a lot of them don't have records that long, but some have 3-year records.
Yep.
I must say the Templeton Frontier Market has done exceedingly well. 12.5% over 5 years, 3-year period, 6.09, 1 year, 14.89, and year to date, 4.32%. The problem with this fund is it's closed to new investors.
I was just about to make that point.
Yeah, this is basically comes back to the fact that you only have 0.4% of the investable stock market capitalization in these countries, so one really can't be too aggressive and get too large. On the other hand, I look at some of the exchange-traded funds. The VanEck Africa Fund is down 6.5% year-to-date. Over 5 years, it's down 4%. The PowerShares MENA Fund, MENA stands for Middle East, North Africa, is down 11% for 5 years and down 63 basis points this year. And the other one that I have followed is the Guggenheim Frontier Fund. That is a BNY Mellon New Frontier ADR GDR Index Fund. And that's down 16% year-to-date and down 6% over 5 years. So it seems to me that the managed funds, the Templeton was the one I mentioned. Another one here that looked pretty good was the Nile Capital Pan-Africa Fund, which is up 10% over 5 years. the hardening lever frontier market, which I've mentioned in the past, 9.5% this year, 19% 1 year, and the Wasatch frontier market's up 25% over 1 year and 9%, almost 9% this year. So it's just important, I think, to be willing to give the responsibility for managing to a manager who can avoid problems, these blow-ups. For example, if a country has a currency issue or political turmoil or something like that, a balance of payments issue, it's a manager who's going to be able to move from country to country and region to region. And an ETF, you're not going to get that. You're going to get the bad with the good.
You are, and also I think an important point to make, Paul, is knowing what's inside the tin with those ETFs. For example, the Guggenheim Frontier ETF you mentioned, FRN, I think, is a stock ticker. It's, what, 80% Latin America? Because it's the GDRs and ADRs, so it's Latin American companies that have been issuing most of those. And I think the Frontier markets, the iShares Frontier market they just introduced, is something like 60% in the Gulf market. So again, you're not getting what you necessarily think you are when you're buying ETFs at this stage of the market. Would that be a fair comment?
Yeah. I think that's very, very true. Very true.
So we've had the question I think we always finish with is active versus passive, and you I think have said it several times and you just reiterated it again that in inefficient and illiquid and developing markets such as frontier and emerging markets, active management is overwhelmingly the way to go, even though you're paying, what are the management expense ratios on these actively managed, 2.5% or something like that?
Typically 2.5 to 3% if you include all costs. The management fee may be 2.5 total cost, 2.75, 2.8. One of them there was 4.5%, but it was one of the best performers. And of course, again, the reason you want to do this is they have people there in those markets, in those countries, visiting those countries and visiting the companies in those countries in which they're investing, and they can see what's going on. So it's worth it, I think, to pay the 2.5 to 3 or even 4% if you're going to make money, as opposed to paying 79 basis points, as you would on a couple of these ETFs, which sounds very, very low. But if you're not making any money, you're not putting any money in your pocket.
Excellent. All right. Thanks very much indeed, Paul. Appreciate the amount of research you do for this.
Yep. Okay, you're welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And our thanks to Paul DeSisto for that look at the potential impact of tapering by the Federal Reserve on specifically frontier markets, which it's very notable. We've seen that 200 to 400 basis point increase in frontier market bond yields, although it's fair to say that the yields at which they were borrowing earlier this year were probably unsustainably low. When I come back for the break, I'll have two updates on the impact of the crisis in the Middle East. Firstly, we'll be talking to John Derrick at US Global Advisors about the impact on the Eastern European emerging and frontier markets. And then we'll be talking to Montasir Khalefi at Quantum Investment Bank in the Gulf at the effect on some Middle Eastern equities. Please stay with us for both of those reports.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
This program comes to you from the EFMI Media Company. EFMI Media is one of the most comprehensive sources of information and analysis on emerging and frontier markets. EFMI Media has become a leader in knowledge, expertise, and analysis of emerging and frontier markets, both in opportunities to investigate and pitfalls to avoid. For further information about EFMI Media, go to www.emergingfrontier.ca or call 416-944-1750. EFMI Media produces this program, researched and wrote Investing in Frontier Markets, Opportunity, Risk, and Role in an Investment Portfolio, which is set for release later this year, and is currently working on a second book, also on frontier markets. EFMI also publishes a newsletter called EFMI Information and provides knowledgeable speakers on these and other topics. For further information about EFMI Media, go to www.emergingfrontier.ca, write to info@emergingfrontier.ca, or call 416-944-1750.
Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned into Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. To connect with our program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's toll-free in North America, 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to info@emergingfrontier.ca. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing. I'm Gavin Graham, and we're on every Wednesday at 9 a.m., Eastern, 6 a.m. On the Pacific Coast and 2 p.m. in the UK, repeated 12 hours later. Given the prominence of the Syrian crisis and Middle Eastern political developments in the news over the last few weeks, we felt it was important to see if there was any knock-on effect on areas outside of the Middle East. We'll be going to our correspondent in the Gulf, the Persian Gulf, a little later in the segment. But for the moment, we wanted to see what was happening in Eastern Europe. So to talk about that, we have John Derrick on the line from San Antonio, Texas. He's portfolio manager at US Global Advisors. Welcome back to the program, John.
Thanks, Gavin.
You and your group are obviously tracking Eastern European countries, the emerging and the frontier markets closely. Has there been much impact there in terms of what's been happening in Syria and Egypt?
Well, I would say there hasn't been a lot of direct impact. I think somewhat indirectly they're impacted, and I would say it's obviously Turkey with the border has some impact, but on the financial markets it really doesn't seem to have had much of an impact. I think the bigger impact has really been on Russia with just elevated oil prices, and I think Russia is probably the biggest beneficiary, at least in that Eastern European region, emerging Europe region, just due to higher oil prices and just kind of the knock-on effect that it has throughout the whole economy of just unrest in the Middle East.
I mean, assuming the crisis does continue, what impact would higher oil prices have, specifically, as you mentioned, on Russia, and then maybe in terms of the second level effects, because obviously Russia is the major energy supplier, not merely to Eastern Europe, but to a lot of Western Europe as well.
Sure. Yeah. I think, you know, if you get a continuation of essentially what's been going on, I think oil prices probably remain elevated. It probably remains a risk premium in oil prices. And so with that, I think, you know, the government is relying on oil export money to fund the government, essentially. And it funds a lot of their social programs. It funds essentially it runs most of the country. And so I think you'll just see if oil prices remain elevated at these levels, you know, Brent somewhere around 115 or so, that's a good place for Russia to be. The budget would be balanced and maybe even a little bit of a surplus. And that would trickle down all the way through, you know, consumer names to banking names to throughout the whole economy. I think maybe one other angle that's interesting in Russia as well is the natural gas, angle, which has been a drag, recent times. But I think that's another big, opportunity for Russia, as we talk about energy, going forward. I think you're seeing LNG projects moving forward. Which actually I think is, and we're seeing a pipeline project moving forward as well, into China. I think those are big important steps for Russia to diversify their revenue base and their, you know, you essentially you export to Western Europe, and Western Europe has kind of gone through a little bit of a renaissance here recently, with particularly with renewables, particularly in places like Germany and those kind of things. Yep. Russia's also, they tie their gas to oil prices, which there's been a disconnect recently with this kind of shale revolution in the U.S. and just a more abundant natural gas globally around the world. You've seen a little bit of a disconnect there. And so they needed to diversify their revenue stream. You're going to, you know, this Yamal LNG project on the far north of Russia and the Arctic is moving forward, and they actually just got Chinese company CNPC took a 20% stake. I think that deal still has to be finalized, but they've made the announcement and they've agreed to, you know, offtake, I think something like 3 million cubic meters of gas, or 3 billion cubic meters of gas per year, and so kind of another cornerstone investor along with Total. And so anyway, I think those are some very interesting things that are taking place for Russia that actually help diversify the economy. But also I think it tells you something about, you know, where we're headed and the emphasis. Actually, I also saw kind of related that China in Beijing, they want to shut down all the coal power plants in Beijing by 2017. And yep. To do that, you're going to need a lot of natural gas. And so they're going to have to fund it somehow, either through LNG or these pipeline projects. And so definitely, I think things are changing.
And by LNG, we mean liquefied natural gas. So you freeze it to what, minus 273, and then you can actually either ship it by tanker or by pipeline.
Right.
That's a fascinating thought in terms of China trying to address some of the issues it has with pollution caused by burning high sulfur coal in its power plants and replacing it with a cleaner fuel like gas. Earlier in the program, one of our guests was suggesting that maybe we should retire the term BRIC for Brazil, Russia, India, China, because while it might have been useful 10 years ago, they've all developed in such different ways because they have such different composition of their economy. And here we have would it be fair to say that the China-Russia gas situation is a perfect example of how Russia's economy is very largely driven by the commodity exports, whereas someone like China, or indeed Western Europe for that matter, is an importer of commodities. So what's good for one is absolutely not good for the other.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, and I think, as you know, like you said, at one time maybe it was irrelevant, but I think at the current point in time, you have to look at each individual country individually, and there's definitely different dynamics at play in every one of those countries. So it's hard to lump them all together and to kind of some homogeneous grouping.
And would it be fair to say, to sort of summarize, that while Russia is probably going to be the most direct beneficiary from, or the most directly affected by, what's been happening in the Middle East, if it leads to higher oil prices, we haven't really seen that yet been reflected in other Eastern European equity markets, that in essence there hasn't really been any major or direct effect on their equity prices. It's been very largely just noise in the background.
I would think so. Yeah, I think they have a lot of kind of domestic issues. I think are taking more center stage. I think one of the positives, and we've talked about this on the show before, is the recovery in Western Europe, and that actually seems to be progressing along. And I think there's been I think it's in kind of an interesting time actually right now, in that you have China growth picking up very visibly. You've seen European growth, particularly Western European growth, picking up, particularly out of these like manufacturing indicators, purchasing manager indicators, people are feeling much more confident about the global growth story. And then you combine that with, I think there's a comfort level now with this Fed QE tapering program that's been talked about. And the market's had several months to kind of digest it and all those kind of things. And it seems like the market's very comfortable with the Fed moving forward with this tapering program, which was one of the big causes of the sell-off in the emerging markets before. Yep. And you've seen a significant rally in some of the markets and some of the currencies just in the last few days and into the last week. And so we may be at least a near-term inflection point where investors are starting to feel better about the markets again, or starting to feel comfortable with the macro environment, and looks to be reallocating monies back to some of these emerging markets. And so and that's good for Eastern Europe, it's good for Russia, it's good for just emerging markets in general.
Thanks very much indeed, John, for that excellent summary, as always.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks to John Derrick, Portfolio Manager at U.S. Global Investors in San Antonio, Texas. Now, we'd like to actually go to Montasa Kalethi at Quantum Investment Bank in the Gulf to look at markets which are obviously much closer, both physically and in public perception, investor perception, to what's happening in Syria. Welcome to the show, Montasa.
Hi, Gavin. Thank you for having me.
Not at all. Could you just give us a basic update on what's been happening in the equity markets out there since we last spoke?
Since last Wednesday when I spoke, the markets here in the region were mainly driven by the news related to Syria.
So they've been volatile, but not necessarily loss-making, correct?
No, loss-making for those who bailed, but probably not permanent losses for those who did not panic and fail.
So it's been pretty volatile, but on a day-to-day basis, it hasn't been moving just in one direction.
Yeah. Yep. Yes, very, very high volatility. So all over the end of last week and beginning of this week, we had the market accentuating their decline. But yesterday, following Kerry's declaration that have reassured the market and also Russia's move to offer a diplomatic issue, we had a very strong rebound. For example, in Dubai, plus 8.5%, Abu Dhabi, plus 5.5%, Qatar, almost plus 5% also, and almost plus 3% for Tadawul. Today, however, after the speech of Obama that has confirmed this diplomatic issue to the crisis, we have seen some profit-taking in the beginning of the day, but at the end of the day, the markets were almost flat, with Dubai progressing by 0.4%, Saudi Arabia gaining 0.25%, and Qatar flat on the day.
So, while we've seen this volatility, the longer-term perspectives, particularly in the Gulf region and Saudi, are still fairly encouraging, as we've discussed before?
Yes, despite this volatility, we think on the long term there are encouraging economic perspectives, which in my view reduces the long-term risk. And I think, the country here, especially Dubai, should beneficiate, even if there is, the longer term, beneficiate even if there is, there is an attack against Syria. But for now,
I was going to say, but if there is military action against Syria, obviously that would lead to a fairly sharp sell-off in the short term.
Yes, I think that it could add volatility is still high, and if there is a comeback to the strike eventuality, so we can see the market really falling again. So on the short term, also there is the perspective of the tapering by the Fed, which also will see the market will be really a point of attention for the markets over the next week.
But over the longer term, just to finish up, Montasa, you are still fairly optimistic. You and your colleagues think the outlook, particularly for the Gulf states and Saudi, is encouraging, and there's been some evidence in terms of the economic figures recently, correct?
Yeah, sure. We had last week, we had really strong PMI figures for both Saudi Arabia and UAE. This showed good growth for the oil sector. More specifically, if we would like to talk about Dubai, we have continued recovery of the Dubai real estate markets, which is ranked amongst the most performing of the world. We had also this morning the figures of the non-oil trade, which gained 16% in Dubai over the first half. And on the other hand, if we consider the oil industry, we have that Saudi Arabia has raised its output, its oil output, and now is really pumping at one of the highest level never seen in more than 30 years. Both the oil sector and the other sectors should continue to perform, and we expect to see this in the profits of listed companies here over the coming quarters.
Thanks very much indeed, Montasa. Our thanks to Montasa Khalefi in Dubai for the update on the impact of the Middle Eastern crisis there. When we come back from the break, we're going to be talking to a financial analyst in Colombia about the outlook there, which is Colombia consistently ranks high as one of the most attractive emerging or stroke frontier markets in the world.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Do you like what you hear about investing in emerging and frontier markets on this program? Would you like to learn more to increase your investing effectiveness? EFMI Media also publishes a subscription-based newsletter called EFMI. We'd like to tell you more about it. Drop us an email at info@emergingfrontier.ca. We've designed EFMI as a newsletter to provide expert and up-to-date news and analysis of opportunities in the same markets that we discuss here on Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. EFMI has information and analysis that you won't find anywhere else, and you can start receiving it by emailing info@emergingfrontier.ca.
Today's business marketplace is becoming increasingly global thanks to technologies that didn't even exist a few short years ago. Your business might be a startup, or you might be one of the global 500. Either way, you're probably looking at customers and competitors in faraway regions. Listen for Global Reach with host Tay Revez as she brings together experts, ideas, and listeners to help you anywhere in the world. Global Reach is broadcast every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Save on your prescriptions with the RX Savings Plus drug discount card offered by Voice America. It is not insurance, and discounts are only available from participating pharmacies, but 9 out of 10 pharmacies participate nationwide. Start saving today. Print your free card online at voiceamerica.rxsavingsplus.com or text the word TALK RADIO to 96362.
You are tuned into Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. To connect with our program today, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's toll-free in North America, 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to info@emergingfrontier.ca. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to the final segment of Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing. I'm Gavin Graham. We're going to conclude today's edition with a report on Colombia and Colombian equities, and maybe some Colombian coffee as well, by talking to Rupert Stebbings, an old friend of the program, Vice President Equities and Research at Valores Bancolombia there. We check in on Colombia regularly, as I mentioned before the break, because it ranks high on the list of most promising emerging or frontier markets. Welcome back, Rupert.
Good morning, Gavin. How are you?
All right. Well, let's start off with the energy company Ecopetrol, because I believe it launched its U.S.-denominated bond issue yesterday. How did that go, and what's been happening to the share price?
Yeah, the issuance went tremendously well. They have an initial shelf offering of $3 billion. They actually issued $2.5 billion yesterday. The official demand was at $7 billion, but I'm hearing this morning that actual demand was closer to $10 billion. So the spread between 5 and 30-year maturity, so the company should be fairly happy with that. The question, obviously, is what do they want the money for? The stock price itself has moved up steadily in line with the market. The coal cap here has recovered fairly well since we last spoke, and basically the best performing of the main markets here in Latin America year to date. And Ecopetrol is a 20% component of that, obviously benefit. But there are still outstanding questions over the stock in general in terms of valuation. I don't think any analysts would deny it's about the most expensive oil stock, definitely in Latin America and perhaps further afield. So still questions about the stock itself, although the bond issue was obviously extremely successful.
So moving from one commodity, oil, to another, coffee, let's look at Nutresa. What do you make of its recent deal to link up with Starbucks?
This is I think for the journalists, this is a very sexy deal. It makes a lot of headlines. Nutresa has had a long-standing deal with Starbucks. It produces the Zia products that you find in Starbucks across the world. It's an interesting transaction. Nutresa declared that in a conference call recently that they were going to get into this sector, in the retail, the high street kind of franchise business. Starbucks was, when you think about it, a rational start for them because they are a coffee producer. They have a tie with Starbucks. It's a tough space. They announced they're going to open starting from 2014. But to put things in context, I mean, Juan Valdez, which is owned by the Coffee Federation here, is a very, very strong franchise already here. I mean, Juan Valdez, for example, they have 87 sites just in Bogota. And, you know, Starbucks and Nutresa are going to start with their first one in Bogota. Juan Valdez is the number five franchise in the country in food. And there's another company called OMA, which is the number six franchise, which is another coffee franchise. So whilst Nutresa has a tremendous name and locally will understand the rules of the game, it's a tough market. I'm sure they'll do well, but it's going to be a slow burner.
All right. So the next stock we should touch on is probably Avianca, the airline, and it's intending to issue ADRs. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, last week we had a report from a local journalist saying they were going to issue bonds. Obviously, the journalist got 90% of the story correct, but it's actually the next story out was that it was going to be an ADR issue between $400 and $500 million. Overnight, they confirmed they're looking at it and they're doing the paperwork. I know that they've been looking at this transaction for over a year, and Framovich, who's the owner, the magnate who's part of the board, he was in the press yesterday saying that, you know, the stock's hugely undervalued locally. They are concerned about liquidity locally, and obviously this is a way of getting more profile and more liquidity into the name. I mean, his point was fairly justified. It's one of the few profit-making airlines in the world, regularly pays a dividend and comes up with the numbers. So I think liquidity will be one of the main drivers for them.
And just for the benefit of our listeners who may not be familiar, by creating American Depository Receipts, ADRs, A, isn't that relatively expensive because you're doing the New York listing? But secondly, apart from the liquidity issue, what other benefits would the company get from doing that?
Oh, without question. I mean, even though Colombia has opened up greatly as a market, it's still more difficult to transact, obviously, than in the U.S. And the U.S., you know, retail houses, they'll use ADRs in their instruments. So if you have ADRs, you're going to get into the issues of currency transactions, having local depositories. I think for American retail investors, without question, ADRs are less complicated. And also for a lot of funds still have to hold their position in dollars. And I think it's beneficiary for anybody to have an ADR. Obviously, there is a cost involved, but they'll do the numbers on that. And, you know, Bank Colombia and Ecopetrol have never had any problems, and it's been very beneficiary to those in terms of profile. So I can only imagine how the ADR will benefit.
I'm sure that it will, and in fact, one of the stocks that we look at in our book on investing in frontier markets is Copa, the Panamanian airline, which has done exceptionally well since it actually listed in New York a few years ago. So, to finish up, let's talk about something a little less sexy, maybe Isagen. First of all, what is the company, and secondly, what's happening as far as corporate developments there?
Isagen is one of the largest generating companies here. It's widely owned by overseas funds. It's in the middle of a 57% owned by the government. The government are looking to sell that stake. So the stock has had a bubble up because obviously it's seen as a very lucrative asset. If overseas guys come in to buy it. We recently downgraded it from a buy to a hold because it's already bubbled up close to our price target, which is 3,070 pesos. There was a lot of political interest in the stock, as with any privatization, I think, in emerging markets. there's obviously a side that says no. So right now the courts are involved. A lot of politicians are involved. We're in the middle of an election process. So, I mean, whilst we think it's absolutely the right thing to do, you know, the $4 billion would be much better invested in infrastructure. Right now, the process is in the courts, and we'll see where we get with that.
Thanks very much indeed, Rupert. That's an excellent survey of some of the major stocks in Colombia, and I'm sure we'll be back to you to be speaking about the Colombian market again, because it does, as mentioned, continue to rank as one of the most attractive in the frontier and emerging market space.
Okay, Gavin, have a good day.
Thanks so much. Our thanks to Rupert Stebbings at Valores Bank Colombia for the update on Colombian equities and the development of the market there. As he mentioned with the Isogen sell-off, a lot of interest from foreign investors because there's a need for infrastructure investment in Colombia, as many other frontier and emerging market countries, but also that Colombia is regarded with its young population, commodity resources such as coffee and oil and gas, and very high legal protection for investors as being a very attractive market. With that, we're finishing the today's edition of Emerging and Frontier Markets. Please join us again next week. We plan to talk to Thomas Vester at Lloyd George Management in London about why the company is so attracted to Africa, and journalist Bill Hinchberger, who covered Brazil for many years, about the outlook for that country. Peter Merrick will be explaining the country's demographics and how they play into the upcoming Soccer World Cup next year and the Olympics in 2016. And our African correspondent Samuel Okocha checks in with the report on oil thefts at Nigerian refineries and looks to see whether that has any investor impact. And we'll be continuing to monitor the Middle East. I'm Gavin Graham. Our producer is Al Emid. We are the co-authors of Investing in Frontier Markets, Opportunity, Risk, and Role in an Investment Portfolio, which is out this month by John Wiley. If you check on Amazon, you will find it somewhat discounted from the price which was set for a, I think it's fair to say, a professional market. We're also working on a Frontier Markets for Dummies, which is set for release by the end of the year, and the EFMI newsletter. For more information, please write to info@emergingfrontier.ca. Again, that's info@emergingfrontier.ca. Thanks, and please join us again next week.
Thanks for listening today to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with host Gavin Graham. Be sure to join us again next Wednesday at 6 a.m. Pacific Time, 9 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for another edition. Have a profitable week. Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.